So, Berto, I thought we would respond to some patron emails and maybe do some follow-ups on previous episodes. What do you say, Berto?
Those are always fun times.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist and a professor.
My name is Humberto Castañeda, and I am a Facebook privacy lawyer.
We also have a special guest with us, Michael Drain from the Unpopular Culture podcast.
Howdy, boys.
Thanks.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
Michael Drain,
would you like to introduce yourself?
I think you did a great job, Kirk. Michael Drain from Unpopular Culture.
Doctoral candidate at Antioch University, Seattle.
Oh, you're going to really sell me, huh?
It's so draining to introduce yourself.
It is quite draining, isn't it? Mike Drain in the membrane, if you will. You don't have to.
So I want to do a follow-up on an episode in which I was by myself and I was talking about pornography. Ooh. And I unintentionally kind of did a mini deep dive on porn addiction in general.
Oh.
And inevitably, there's a discussion of religion and culture. And immediately as it was posted, I got some negative emails.
Color me intrigued.
Mostly positive, but a couple negative notable patron emails.
But they were able to put down the porn for a second to send the emails,
which is impressive.
They were nice about it, which is always great. And one anonymous patron said that I was Christian bashing. I was bashing Christians, which I listened back to a part of it, and I could see how if you were Christian and of a particular mindset, I could see how it could come across that way. And I deeply apologize for that. It's totally not my intention because I try to not bash any group at all, particularly groups that I'm not a part of. And honestly, you could even claim I am a part of the Christian culture. I grew up massively Christian. Most of my family is Christian. So, and I still have Christian streaks in me, and I don't have any real personal negative associations with Christianity. Right. So it'd be a little weird that I would come across that way. You know, I have legitimate groups that I actually have, shall we say, I have to restrain negativity around.
Mm-hmm. like Berto's?
Yeah.
The Berto group?
But Christians, I don't. And I have talked about this podcast, I believe, in which I will defend Christians against bashing. You know, we can criticize any group for lots of different things. Any particular group can be criticized for things, particularly any established mainstream privileged culture like Christianity. But at the same time, there can be unfair criticism or unfair generalizations. I mean, that's the thing about Christianity is there's so many different types and so many different sorts of people.
Yeah, it's a nebulous entity.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there are Christian churches in Seattle that are the most pro-LGBTQIA institutions that have ever been known to man, environment, pro-charity.
There's one downtown Seattle that says we love our Muslim brothers and sisters.
Right, exactly. And so, but I also know there are churches in the area that have policies on their website that state that they are against gay marriage and this kind of stuff. And so, you know, it runs the gamut. And really, and it's not just Christianity, it's any religion. And frankly, atheists can be just as bigoted as anybody else. So,
damn straight.
Anyway, so
is there a chance they misunderstood you because you were doing the podcast?
Yeah, what did you say? I mean, did you say?
Like, I said a number of things, and it was, like I said, a mini deep dive. But I started off by, because the person was asking about women and porn addiction. They were saying, why do women get addicted to porn? And I basically just started off the segment by Googling women and porn addiction and just looking at what comes up. And what came up was 99% of the sites that came up on the first four pages on Google were Christian sites.
Fascinating.
Why? That had one and only angle, which was that porn is wrong and that you need to refrain. You know, because I thought there would be something, particularly for women, I thought there would be some sex positive message around like it's okay to watch porn, and yeah. society says that it's not okay, and women can watch porn too, and there's ethical porn, but there was just nothing. It was just one Christian site. Now, those are particular Christian sites. There are Christians and Christian organizations that are absolutely sex positive and absolutely open to pornography. Right.
And you were Googling it with only one hand, to be fair. Right? So like that could affect the results.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, but at any rate, whenever I go into a culture discussion, as I've already done in this episode, I have to ride this line between discussing something in a real way while at the same time choosing my words and having enough caveats so that people understand what I'm basically saying. And if the impression was received by even one person that I was bashing or somehow against, truly that's not in my heart. I mean, take it from Birdo. Anytime this guy even tries to bash on anything, like, I will jump down his throat in a way and Drain's experience.
They call me deep throat as a result.
Drain's experienced that too. I mean, you know, both you guys will, you know, state very common opinions that most people support, and I will have a very unpopular reaction to that to everyone, and that I will defend.
I'll be like, you know, a lot of podcast hosts really defend a lot of groups if you try to bash them. And Kirk will be like, no, that's not true. Where are the statistics on that?
Well, the last time we talked about this, Berto, I even brought up the KKK as a group that is worthy of being defended at times. And that is like, you know, I'm not making any friends when I'm doing that. You know, I'm not making any friends. So not that they don't have problems, not that Christians don't have problems or Republicans don't have problems or Democrats don't have problems or men have problems or gamers have problems or podcast, you know, and they're not an equal amount of problems. It's not like the KKK has an equal amount of problems as some other groups. They have massive amounts of problems. But the point is that, so another patron wrote in and also was criticizing my discussion of, because basically my whole, which I'll get into in a second, but anyway, another patron said, quote, I have watched porn on the internet once in a while, and I see some stuff that looks violent and demeaning or weird, like shoving huge objects in women's vaginas. I don't see the positive there. It's yucky, unquote. And they were also saying that she was also saying that she didn't agree with my take on porn, which I didn't know I was stating a take.
How do you express your opinion about something like sexuality, which is sort of to each their own kind of a topic? I mean, that just seems to me like, you know what I mean?
Right, that's tricky.
Yeah, like your listener, I love your listener. I've never met him, but they, you know, they write in and say, you know, putting things up girls' vaginas is yucky. But to other people, that's perfectly fine and normal.
Right. But the overall thesis that I'll say is that there are significant cultural pockets and perhaps echo chambers where there is no data going in. So if you were part of a group of people who either didn't watch porn yourselves or never talked about it, then, and never exposed yourself to it, then you basically have attitudes that you inherited from your childhood or from some legacy culture of some kind. You know what I mean? Right. That still exists for sure today, that are really, in my view, uninformed. You know, you just don't, you have a very, like, I remember, this would have been 20 years ago, I was at a party or something, and the subject of porn came up. And these women they were saying something like, oh, yeah, porn today, you know, it's all these shaved vaginas because men just want to have sex with children.
That's one hell of an overgeneralization.
Yeah, and I remember, a bunch of women agreed. They're like, "Oh yeah, that thing about the shaved vaginas because men want to have sex, because all the men who look at this want to have sex with children." And I was like, "Whoa!" Like, it wasn't just one person. This was an idea that was rattling around in a group of people, and I was like, "That's an interesting point of view, you know, that I've never heard before. That I don't know if that's true." And so, anyway. So, but to go into this, and I want to, well, what are your guys' thoughts on that? You kind of expressed a
little bit. Sexuality is as subjective as your taste in food or something. My personal stance is you can't judge somebody for their sexuality, even if you disagree with it. That's like saying you're a bastard, Kirk, because you don't like pizza, you know, or, oh my God, you like pepperonis, only, you know, assholes like pepperoni on their pizza, you know, like that's, who am I to judge you for the things that you are drawn to?
Right.
If you're not hurting somebody else, which doesn't sound like that's been brought up at any point, then I don't see the problem.
Right. You
know? And I can vouch for you that the perils of podcasting is you're talking about this person in their pocket and they have their own little subculture where they believe a certain thing, and that's fine. That's great. They have a right to that. As a podcaster, this episode we're recording right now is going to go out to the whole world.
Right.
And
it'll enter the cultural pockets of
all of everybody.
Several pairs of pants.
So, that's right. So it's impossible to not piss somebody off. And if you don't piss somebody off, you're not being interesting enough. You know what I mean? You're not putting up any kind of, like, to not piss anybody off, you would just be putting out the most neutral opinion possible, the most blanket. I mean,
right.
What's one topic? What's one politician? What's one movie? What's one anything
that
doesn't bug somebody?
Totally, totally.
I think there is an aspect to pornography that is abusive. Because the way, it's not like our society has a system where, you know, getting into pornography as a profession is a well supported and
out in the open.
Yeah. And it's not, and in fact, it's worse than that, right? I think that there's some predatory aspects to it.
Yeah. There's sex trafficking and all
sex trafficking, all these things. On top of which, there are some types of porn that would break laws, right? Like if you are, in fact, having porn with minors or with animals or what have you, you know, like there are some things. So there are boundaries.
Of course.
But within those boundaries, there is still infinite variety.
Again, the caveat being that if you're not hurting somebody else and having sex with a kid is obviously damaging to that person.
Right. So in that sense, I think there are cases where you can say, you know, I object to pornography in our society because it, in general, it objectifies or it does this. I can understand that perspective. That said, if I were given a choice between, hey, we're going to produce some footage with people that are consenting and get paid, and then that footage is going to be used by a pretty large percentage of the population to essentially keep their even keel when it comes to sexuality, or we're going to have a whole bunch of, you know, pent up aggressive people and blah, blah. I think it probably does more good than harm. But I don't have the data to back that.
Yeah, clearly. That last bit is not supported by science, but.
Which last bit?
The notion that having porn reduces aggressiveness, but the I mean, there's individual cases.
I meant sexual relief probably reduces aggressiveness.
But you know, nature will find a way. You know, a person without porn will figure out some solution to masturbating or having sex. But it's an interesting angle that a lot of people take. You know, it's sort of like an economical or crime based justification. But why not just say it's pleasurable? You know, people like to masturbate. People like, or even in couples or groups, they like to watch porn and whatever. And so, you know, for many people, it's a very secret pleasure that people don't often talk about. You know, what I mean?
I think, but there are a lot of pleasures that we feel the need to regulate. Like, you know, it might be pleasurable to inject yourself with any number of substances, but then we end up having to have some regulation around it, at least in more progressive countries, at least medical controls and facilities where you can do it.
Because the idea is that it causes harm, right?
Well, and it could be that porn also causes harm.
But there's no demonstrable. How? There's no demonstrable harm, though.
Well, that was my point, though. Like, because there's no demonstrable harm, it seems to cause more good than harm.
Right.
But, you know.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You can make the arguments that sex trafficking and the seedier part of porn, you know, sex with minors, that sort of thing, absolutely damaging. But consenting adults that are, you know, you also have the other side where people feel liberated by participating in porn. And who's to say that that's bad?
Right. So let me just go through my notes here because you guys have hit on a lot of points already because you guys are so smart. But
genius, if you will.
Because we watch a lot of porn.
Yeah, we do.
But just getting to what the patron saw where there was shoving huge objects into a woman's vagina, and that being off-putting to you. Just to drill down on that specifically, certainly that have, you know, watching that video, you could be watching a video that is quote unquote unethical in my book. It could be someone who's actually being abused, you know, either they're, you know, a sex slave, you know, they're caught up in sex trafficking, or they're being abused to do it, or they're in a country that doesn't have a lot of options for women, and so they have to turn to that, you know, and so that pornography practice to those human beings that are being harmed is morally wrong, and or you watching the video is morally wrong because it encourages other people to engage, or at least rewards that particular engagement by there's some kind of monetary, either with ads or you're paying for it or something, you know.
Sure.
Or on the other hand, it could be completely ethical in that it's a kink that everyone is participating in
consensually,
and not only which would be the baseline, but you could even have the actress, they actually love to do this.
Yeah, they feel empowered. They want to. They enjoy it.
And they do it at home by themselves. And so they might as well, you know. Now, you, patron, apparently that's not your thing. Totally cool. But it's actually not to, you know, bash the patron, but it's actually, in my book, morally wrong to judge such a thing without knowing that it actually is harming that person. To look at another person and say, you like pepperoni pizza, you're yucky, there's something wrong with you, you can't do that, you need to closet that, or I don't want to see it, or you're disgusting, or there's something evil about you, is, in my book, I hate to say this, an immoral act. Now, you just show a video like that to a group of people walking around, there's so much social pressure to be disgusted and judge it that I don't judge the judgers, because there's a humongous societal pressure. I mean, the three of us, we're all high and mighty right now, being all sex positive and liberal and everything. You put us in an Oprah audience, and there's I bet you Berto might actually say something, but because you're brave that way, but I wouldn't. I'd be like, oh, gross. Yeah. Ooh, that's,
you get a porno and you get a porno.
But I think it's not only just not a good idea to judge people's kinks, but I think it's actually morally wrong. You're committing the thing that you think the other people are committing.
And without a point of reference, like some sort of ruler or some quarter or something that you know the dimensions of, it's really unfair to have videos like that, because you can't really judge just how big that object is.
So you guys have already gone over this a little bit in terms of, like, can porn be morally wrong? And the answer is yes, absolutely. It can be harmful to people in the industry, like I've been saying. And when you consume it, it encourages the harm of those people, human trafficking, exploitation, people getting STIs, that kind of thing. But this is the exact same as any other industry. When you buy an iPhone, right, do you know where the iPhone comes from? When you buy Nike shoes, do you know where that's coming from? Clothing. When you drive your car, every time or anytime you consume any energy, you are contributing to global warming, which affects mostly poor people in other countries.
But to be fair, when you contribute to global warming, the climate does get warmer, which means people shed clothes, which means we need porn less.
You're on fire tonight, bro.
I just don't like the idea. I don't know. I, with all due respect, I just don't like the idea of judging sexuality, anybody's sexuality. It's like this is the same thing I say when people argue against. Like,
why did you start with "all due respect"?
Because I don't want to. I don't want to piss off your patron.
Oh, you know what I mean? I thought you were saying it to me.
Yeah, Kirk, that's to you. I have zero respect for you, Kirk.
With all zero due respect.
With no respect to you. No, I just, it's like the same argument that I've had with somebody that comes to mind about homosexuality. It's like, well, that's their sexuality. And you can go into history and culture and it's always existed, you know, no matter who came, no matter where, it pops up all over the place. Masturbation. Sexual urges, these are things that are deeply rooted in our psychology.
Absolutely. So it can harm the people that are working in the industry, like I said, but similar to any other industry. And we should absolutely be looking at that. Number two, it can encourage harm to people in the real world.
Right.
For example, you might watch porn that justifies rape of other people or something, and then you end up raping other people. Research shows this is a very minor issue. It should be looked at for sure, but the vast majority of people consuming porn are not...
Don't go out and rape somebody after they watch it. This is right. Like the video game, violent video games making somebody go out and kill somebody argument.
It might even be lesser, you know, there might be even lesser evidence because there's actually like a slight bit of evidence about the violence thing, but in general, playing video games doesn't cause...
It's well, likely and, they had those kind of urges and impulses before they watched the porn. You
well, know what I mean? Yeah, totally, but at the same... And
you don't just watch a porn and I'm a rapist now, you know, there's some right. underlining shit going on.
No,
there.
And for people, most people don't want to watch rape porn. Right. Do you know what I mean?
And if they did, it's because there's something going on in the first place.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Here's the other thing. When you're done playing a round of, you know, close combat or whatever, what's the one we used to love? The World War, to
actually,
modern warfare.
Oh, yeah, I just modern warfare. Playing that like an hour
yeah.
ago.
So you when you finish a round of that, do you go like, oh, I don't want to touch a controller for a while?
I picture it's like Clockwork Orange, like I strap you down to a chair and open up your eyeballs and make you watch a rape fantasy and you're like, rape. You know, you like walk out into the world and just like wander down the street looking for somebody to have sex with. Yeah. It just doesn't work that way.
Now, in our society, we absolutely have misogynistic notions and rape justifying notions that are completely out there in society that absolutely do justify for some individuals exploitation of women and rape. So we're not going to say that media and culture don't affect people, but there just isn't a lot of research demonstrating that watching porn in general creates that kind of problem for people.
What about the aspects of porn that have less to do with the fact that it is porn, but if there's a lot of... No, stop. Ooh, but that feels good. Oh, no, stop.
Right. So, which is prevalent in James Bond movies and other, you know, it's I would guess more prevalent in general outside of porn.
Yeah.
In rap music, you know.
Yeah.
And so, but in general, again, for most people, it doesn't push them to that. Does it create a general culture that probably pushes the needle a little bit.
That is a better argument. I think James Bond is a great example. That early misogynistic kind of like, if you just force yourself on the girl enough, she'll submit and be like, oh, okay, and it's all good again.
Yeah,
now, that is a thing.
Right. I talked recently about watching Goldfinger again for the first time since I've become an enlightened male. And my God, as a kid, when I watched it at 15, it never crossed my mind. I was like, ooh, James Bond, he's cool. Watching it now, it's one of the most cringeworthy. There are some awful, literal rape scenes in which James Bond rapes women.
Holy
I mean,
shit.
It is, it's not like questionable rape. It is like, or sexual assault, you know, it is actual sexual assault. Maybe even for standards back then, I don't know. So again, people can be harmed in the industry. Two, it can encourage people to harm others in the real world. And three, it can harm the viewer, is what people will say. For example, watching porn makes you depressed or demented, or you know, or gives you a very bad idea about what sexuality is. And certainly, there are examples like that, and we need to look at that. But again, we can criticize lots of different things for that we don't react to the way that some people react to porn. And it should be mentioned that American mainstream culture has a very strong foundation in puritanical notions. Many people fled Europe specifically to practice an extremely fundamentalist sect of Christianity. And had very particular views about sexuality, you know, the Scarlet Letter, you know, burning witches at the stake and all that kind of stuff. And every culture, you know, and whenever I hear about this kind of stuff, I'm like, well, you know, that early culture, it's so diluted. I mean, you know, your ancestors came over after that. My ancestor, half of my family actually comes from all that. But Berto, your family came after that, and so it's like we're all just a big mix, you know. But it's like every culture that comes has to assimilate to the foundational structure of a culture, and so even though you other cultures might be coming from completely other points of view, they have to adapt to the puritanical notions in this country.
The melting pot streak that runs throughout the country, which means the individual sexuality gets repressed.
Absolutely. And every culture we could criticize in this way, but ours is, you know, particular to ours. And certainly there are more puritanical societies than ours, but we certainly do have it. Anyway, so the question is, how can people be ethical porn consumers? This is off the top of my head. For men, they can look at themselves and look into feminism and actually try to become more aware of feminist ideals. But for everyone, you just need to educate yourself, you know, similar to your Nike shoes and your iPhone and your car and, you know, food issues, you know, like where is your food coming from?
Yeah, I was thinking about like humanely raised chicken or something like that.
Right, exactly. So humane, fully consensual, well reimbursed, completely free actors and actresses. You know?
Free range porn.
Yeah. Pay attention to the laws in your area and advocate for workers' rights. Pay attention to your own behavior in real life. Like, is it affecting the way you treat other people? Is it affecting your mood? That kind of thing. And I think, you know, if you spend time doing that, and there, I did a quick Google search for some of these issues, and there, with the amount of porn and the amount of money that is in porn that and the amount of porn that's being consumed on the internet, there are a lot of resources on the internet about ethical porn, feminist porn, porn law. Unions, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's out there. And if you educate yourself and seek out porn that is decidedly ethical and decidedly, you know, has a practice that actually is visible and ethical, you can, you know, there's a lot out there.
Right.
They could make some kind of branding standard, like a seal of approval. This porn is consensual with all parties involved or
yeah,
something.
I was actually thinking how we don't have rating systems for adult things. Like, you know, we reach adulthood and it's like, all right, everything goes. But it might be useful to have rating systems, right? So it's like, all right, the best G-rated porn is one that, you know, people are very, very obviously loving or whatever, you know, like some set of things that make the sex a little more meaningful or something. And then as you go up in the things, then maybe it gets a little more,
That S&M-ish. Wouldn't have to do with ethics, because you could still have an actor in a G-rated porn that was being exploited.
Is that a thing? A G-rated porn?
Yeah, I mean, it's called softcore porn.
Oh, softcore, okay.
Well, because usually it refers to how much nudity you show. I'm actually talking about, like, because, you know, there's people that object to violence in movies.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right? So I'm actually talking, like, no, there's still going to be, some people are going to find objection to some content in porn. But if you had some sort of way to, like you're saying, to discriminate between the levels.
Okay.
Like, let's say that
it'd be more like categories, like this contains bondage and.
Right. Yes.
And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Categories is maybe the better way to do it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't imply levels and
stuff. Levels implies that something is more severe than the other.
Right.
Okay. So there's that. And then the other one is that we don't have. What I was saying earlier is because we don't have a culture where this is okay, like porn's fine, then it's a taboo to be in a porn or see a porn or talk about porn and all these things. So if we normalize it, the more we normalize it, actually, then I think it gets healthier as an industry. Right?
But you can't quite ever normalize it because you always have this other side that completely objects to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You'll never sell it to them.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Well, you're both right. And over time with movement and education and efforts, we can absolutely change society.
Yeah.
It'll take a long, long time.
Hey,
but we've changed society in a lot of ways already.
Sure.
You know? And so it's just a matter of effort. But it would, you know, it'd be hard for sure.
Sex isn't going anywhere, and neither is pornography. I know that much.
Right.
Go ahead.
What is porn? So you know how people say, like, this is food porn? and this is car porn. Like, what is porn?
I guess it would be like the making of videos.
Or is it, yeah, is it like,
that's
oh my
actually
gosh.
A category.
Here's making of a porn video.
No, that's yeah. a real, or is it that's a category in porn. It's called the behind the scenes porn.
Behind yeah. the scenes porn. Mm-hmm. What about people watching porn?
Voyeuristic porn.
But no, I'm watching people watching porn.
Okay, so you're watching somebody watch called, porn on the couch.
That's called porn inception.
Yeah, pornception. Well, that would have, we got to go deeper.
So
inception, it slows down every level I get deeper into it.
So in conclusion, if you don't like porn, patron, it's totally fine. You don't like porn. Everyone doesn't like things, you know. I don't like things. You know, I don't know. I don't like watching soccer or something. Or no, better yet, you patron, you called it yucky. When you see that porn, I don't know how in the world, because you actually said a specific site, which I won't mention, but you go on a specific site and you mention that you saw something very large going into a woman's vagina.
Right.
And I just have to say, that's, to me, that sounds anomalous. Do you know what I mean? Because porn also in general is pretty vanilla. Yeah. You know what I mean?
No, but a lot of those sites have those little stupid ads, and the ads are like all over the place.
You're
you know?
Right. And the ads are always more extreme than the video itself.
Yeah.
Okay. But,
that's true.
Yeah. What I would recommend is nice videos of basketballs.
Yeah.
Basketballs are a good size. You know, right. It's not too big. It's not too small.
Also, old porn. You could get some porn from the 1920s. I bet that shit's pretty innocuous.
So, patron, you said you thought it was yucky. When I watch cartoons and movies and TV shows that involve vomiting, I don't like watching even a funny show. You know, like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia or something. Like I will look away because I just. And it seems to be happening more and more. And I'm just like, I don't want to see, even though I know it's fake, it's just like, I don't want to see someone throwing up. A lot of time also, I'll be eating lunch while I'm watching these things, you know? And so, but does that mean that vomit scenes or someone who watches vomit scenes and loves it
is a bad person?
Is a bad person and immoral or something? No, of course not. You can be disgusted by lots of things. That doesn't equate to immoral. But it's a common heuristic that a lot of people will utilize to guide them. That's gross. It's immoral. That's gross. God doesn't like it. That's gross. It must be a sin.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you know, there's lots of gross things that have nothing to do with harming anybody. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
A vomit scene in a movie has no harm on anyone.
I got one. Burping and farting. Can't do it.
Really?
Can't do it. I don't want to talk about it. Yeah, it's weird.
Also, the other thing I'll say is that I didn't say in the previous episode is that if you think porn is a sin and if you think masturbation or porn is somehow within your religious beliefs wrong, a sin, immoral, that's also okay with a huge caveat here. There are a lot of religious beliefs that are particular to that religion. I have Jewish friends who don't eat pork, for example. Does that mean that though and those Jewish friends of mine live in they're the small minority in a sea of non-Jewish people who will eat pork now and then, right? Hot dogs and ham and, you know, Canadian bacon and bacon. And so they don't claim to look at goys and say they're immoral and they're sinning because they're not in an echo chamber, you know, they're in an echo chamber of pork eaters, you know what I mean? Whereas when you live in a community and you have friends who also agree that porn is immoral, then you end up confusing a religious belief for fact, you know what I mean? And that's what I think happens to some people, you know, and the opposite can be true as well, as, you know, for others in other kinds of arenas as well.
Is pork eating a euphemism?
Yeah,
maybe.
So in the same way, you know, I have other religious friends who fast on particular days for their religion, but that doesn't mean that non-fasters are immoral.
Right.
So if you believe that porn is a sin and you believe your God or your religious belief set says that for you, watching porn is wrong, or the people around you, whatever, is wrong and immoral and might set you up for going to hell or some kind of punishment from God, totally fine belief system. You're absolutely entitled to that. But don't confuse that for fact for humans, you right. know?
Yeah, you know, I actually have a problem which is seems intractable. We have adopted this very modern recent notion in the last maybe 1,000 years or more, even more recently than that, that the things are okay. Like anything you believe is fine. Everyone's entitled to their own beliefs. And we only draw the line when they act on those beliefs against someone.
Well, it's like everybody's entitled to their belief unless it happens to disagree with my belief.
Well, no, unless it happens to affect someone negatively, right? Like well, infringe on someone else's
belief. Sure, but what does that mean? Like in what way?
You know, like, for example, like I could say, you tell me like, I believe it's perfectly reasonable to shoot people randomly.
Yeah.
And I, like technically you have the freedom of speech.
Right.
And I can't enforce what your brain thinks.
Right.
But what I tell you is like, well, you're entitled to your beliefs, but if you do that, just know you're going to go to jail or worse, right?
Right.
Okay. But what's interesting is this is like, we pretend like humans are like these little perfect, you know, programmable machines where it's like, oh yeah, you know, as long as the program's only running internally, everything's fine. Just don't run the program externally.
So do you propose we look at Jewish people who refrain from eating pork and tell them that they're wrong and they can't believe that?
What I propose is that my probably impossible utopian dream is that we would start actually educating children on like scientific method, logical rationality.
It is
controversial.
But that is what you're saying. You are saying that you wish that people didn't have particular beliefs.
Well, that they would reach the conclusions themselves, so I wouldn't have to enforce it on them.
That you've reached.
No. That logic reaches, right?
That your logic reaches.
Well,
He's right. You take the scientific method, you're going to find a group of people that deny it.
No, but that's actually the beauty of the scientific method.
Yeah.
We have a system for trying to evaluate our beliefs. And we don't have any system for trying to evaluate beliefs that are not based on the scientific method. So you can literally believe that inside of all of us lives a dragon. You can literally believe that because no one's going to stop you.
Well, you're saying that's not true.
And so what we say is hey, man, you're entitled to your beliefs. And I would sign up for that if it really were the case that humans keep their beliefs internally, but inevitably we act on our beliefs, and that's why when we say, hey man, yeah, you can hate all these people and tell us you hate all these people, but you're entitled to those beliefs, just don't act on it. It's like, well, that seems simplistic, but in reality, people end up acting on it.
To be clear, that's not what I'm saying, and. What I'm saying is that for my Jewish friends to believe that eating pork is against their religion and against God and bad for them spiritually, then I don't. Why would I want them to change that? I want them to believe in what they want to believe.
Yeah, and I'm making an argument that I think that leads us to a lot of the problems we have nowadays in our world.
Well, what's the alternative? To have some kind of standardized belief system?
No, the alternative is trying to make sure that, like, if I could rewind time, we would all form beliefs based on things that are testable. The things that are not testable. But we say that, right? Like, how are we recording this podcast right now? We're using things that were testable to record our podcast. And I see a lot of people posting on Facebook through their mobile phone saying, science is BS. The world is flat.
You have a lot of very unusual Facebook friends.
No, but...
I don't doubt you.
But even without my friends, right, I'm just saying, like, people get on pedestals standing on the backs of scientific giants and say, science is BS, higher education is BS, all I need is faith, all of this is bullshit, post to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram right away.
They
take for granted how any of that magic happened, right? And so what I'm saying is, like, we've actually built the world not based on unprovable beliefs. We've built it on testable beliefs.
I agree with that.
But we sit here and we pretend like, hey, everyone's entitled to, everyone's a winner, baby. And I actually think that gets us in trouble because who are you accusing
of this attitude? Is it me?
All of us.
Because, like, I don't have that belief.
No, but we do. Like, we say, hey, you're entitled to your beliefs. This is a common saying we all say.
I don't say that ever.
Well, you were just saying that, like, the people that believe that the pork is bad for the religion, that it's fine.
I talked for 5 minutes. It wasn't you're entitled to your belief shrug, which is how you're portraying it. I said you're entitled to believe as long as you understand it doesn't apply to other people and it's particular to you and your cultural pocket. And you have to understand that in the same way that my Jewish friends who are extremely aware of the fact that they live in a very minority group of people in our society, they totally understand that their belief about pork is not shared by others and they can't impose their views on other people. And if you are of another cultural pocket and believe that porn is immoral and a sin, absolutely you're entitled to believe that. Why would anyone ever say different than that as long as you understand that that doesn't apply to other human beings?
Because they don't, and we don't. We don't understand that it doesn't apply to human beings. And in fact,
But I just got done telling you that some people do.
Yeah, unfortunately not enough, right? Like,
so that would be the criticism.
Yeah, but so that, well, that's why I started by saying that halfway through my statement, I said, look, I'll sign up to this if I believed that we humans could keep our beliefs internally. But I don't believe that this happens. I believe that we humans end up acting on our beliefs.
You wish it happened more often. And it does happen.
Are you saying keep them internally as like not share them with other people, but kind of keep it to yourself? Is that what you mean?
No, I mean, I'm saying like you look around the world and so many of the
But all the problems are not from people that are actively trying to understand their belief system as particular to their cultural pocket. They don't believe that at all. The vast majority of the examples I'm sure we could come up with in which belief systems are, you know, very arguably a problem, they don't have any checks on any of their belief systems.
But why should they? It's just their beliefs. Like who are we to say they are wrong?
Nobody can say they're wrong.
I disagree. Like, I disagree that we can't, but we, on our foundation, we almost run out of a good reason to say that they're wrong.
I don't disagree with anything you're saying other than the fact that essentially what you're saying is we should eradicate particular belief systems. And I don't think that's possible or necessary.
But just like I wasn't saying exactly what you were saying. I'm not saying that. I actually said that it seems impossible to accomplish now. But what I'm saying is that if we were brought up, and I mean like generationally, let alone any new generation, brought up to not conclude things just because they're in our head,
absolutely,
then maybe we wouldn't have so many problems.
And there are efforts for that. Yeah. You know, some educators try, and I think they succeed. The fact that you have that notion in your head that you just said, that you didn't invent that when you came out of the womb, you know, like you and others who influenced you helped you to develop that point of view. So there are things out there, critical thinking and, you know, pro-science. Anyway, so the last thing I want to say before we go to break is about sex positivity, because the patron and I were going back and forth over email, and I was sort of saying, well, you know, there's this movement called the sex positive movement. It's been around for a while, and she was like, what's that? And so I just want to give a definition, and it's the attitude towards human sexuality that regards all consensual sexual activities as fundamentally healthy and pleasurable. Kind of what we've been saying already. There should be a caveat that's like it should be non-harmful to
other people
as well. It's not usually applied to porn, though. It's usually applied to sexual activities, you know, kink, BDSM, or just even your own. In my experience, most people are sex negative about everything, even the most vanilla, you know, missionary sex between a man and a woman when they're married, 10 years into their marriage.
White.
That's hot.
White people. that is
in their 20s.
Yeah.
In their 40s. In their 50s.
No.
In their 90s.
No. That's disgusting. Bad. That's disgusting.
Oh, right.
That's
right.
Gross.
We're talking about model level quality of visuals.
We're talking about the most generic
in their
porn.
20s. Both white.
No, I'm not talking about porn. I'm talking about in real life.
Sex.
Like, people are sex negative in general about having sex in the most vanilla way possible.
Yeah.
And by vanilla, I mean the most the least bothersome to society. So we're totally sex negative, but there's a sex positive movement that is afoot, and Seattle is actually one of the centers for the world. And the idea goes is that you have to fight against your cultural notions and against societal notions that everything is negative, and that you have to evaluate it logically. You have to say, okay, I am watching a video of a big object going into a woman's vagina on the internet. That's yucky to me. I don't like it. It feels sinful. I've heard other people say that's sinful. Porn is sinful. But let me think about this. Is anyone being harmed? Do I know enough to even evaluate that question?
Right.
If I don't have a good notion that someone's being harmed in this process, the viewer, the actors, blah blah blah, then why am I judging it? It's just, you know, it's unless I can find out otherwise, it looks consensual, it's fine, you know.
But I think if you are religious, though, you have a real reason to judge it.
Well, you believe you do.
Groups of religions.
Yeah, sorry. If you're certain groups, you have a real reason to judge it.
Right, because adultery and all that kind of stuff. Absolutely. Those people don't look married.
It's a top 10 commandment.
Right. And, well, as it's interpreted by particular people, you know.
And, lust Bible, is blah, 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 and all these, like, absolutely.
Yeah.
And thou shalt not speed your seed, spill your seed, and all these things.
Yeah.
And so, yep. And so, unfortunately, our appeal would fall on certain deaf ears when it comes to that.
Right. So, just to get specific on generalizable, now, there are beliefs that, so, I predict that someone's going to be like, well, but there are some beliefs that are good, and I will say yes, murder is bad. That there's nothing, you know, most people believe that, and I think most people would also conclude upon investigating it and looking over the philosophy that we can all agree that murder is wrong, and we don't need necessarily science to prove it. Theft is wrong, harming others is wrong, charity is good, helping others is good, pro-social things are good, antisocial things are bad. But there's lots of other kinds of beliefs that we all just have to understand are not necessarily generalizable to everyone else, including porn is bad. Like, you know, off the top of my head, you know, Tom Petty, the song Free Fallen. You know, that some people think that's good. Some people think that's one of the shittiest songs that's ever been.
Some of us think it's one of the legendary songs of all time. I'm judging you so hard right now.
I take it that there's a backstory.
Yeah, we frequently debate Tom Petty. I see.
No, no.
Seems like a petty argument.
I love Tom Petty.
I know.
It's that song,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up at an MTV age when that was played every hour on the hour. And the first, 150,000 times I saw the video, right, yeah. I thought it was okay.
Yeah,
you know?
Radio killed it.
And well, not only radio.
Karaoke bars killed it.
Karaoke bars and open mics. So yeah. So right after that. I was in my early 20s, and we would go to open mics at the Last Exit on Brooklyn in Seattle. And there would – and I, you know, I'm an ex-jock, and so I would always feel like – akin to the other ex-jocks I would see singing songs on stage. And inevitably, they would always sing Free Fallen by Tom Petty.
Right.
And I just felt like their goofiness and cheesiness was sort of rubbing off on me.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'd see some kind of dude bro go up there, and I'd be like, please don't sing Free Fallen. You know? And there they go. And like, I could just see everyone's eyes rolling, and I'm just like,
yeah,
just stop it. You know, like... You know, sing it to yourself, listen to you in your car, but don't subject all
Keep
these like
beliefs. At least put the John Mayer version on or something. Damn.
But like, you know, Seattle has always been so counterculture, and once anything gets a little effed out, like it becomes instantly hated. And so, you know, anyway.
Home of Nirvana.
So, you know, that's a generalizable belief that's a shitty song. And anyway, let's take a break.
Word in and turns it off real quick.
All right, we're back from the break. Berto, why should people become patrons of the podcast?
Oh my gosh. All right, so first of all, we've been at this for almost 10 years, and for the first part of it, it was a slog. But as soon as we got that first patron, my heart went pitter patron.
Pitter patron.
No, man, patrons keep us alive spiritually because they like send emails, we listen to their topics, they contribute to the show so the show can keep going, so Honda can produce all these awesome deep dives, and so I can sit here and blab about random stuff. Also, the contributions help. They help pets, they help future charities. They help a lot of causes, and they get to participate. They get swag. They get to participate in special events. It's all around goodness.
Also, become a patron of the Unpopular Culture Podcast, hosted by Michael Drain.
Thank you, Kirk. Yeah, more deep dive psychological nonsense over at UPC.
You did a great episode on imposter syndrome, and I thought it was a wonderful tone. You self-disclosed in a very helpful way, and that was great.
Thanks.
I wanted to participate on that one, but I didn't feel like I
could
really belong. I didn't think I would...
Yeah. I'm going to have you guys over for a show here soon.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Gripes or Wrath. Berto, you got one?
Oh, yes. All right. So today's Gripe of Wrath is brought to you by the letter Z. Okay. So explaining anything to a support engineer on a support call. So you call any number of things. It could be your bank. It could be your phone company or whatever. And first of all, someone eventually picks up, and I'm skipping all the robotic parts, right? Like enter your thing, which, by the way, they ask you to enter all this information, but when you finally get to a human, they ask you all the same information.
Oh.
It's like, oh, what's your social security? I typed it in.
Yeah.
I know. I'm just trying to make sure that, because I don't know if it. All right, what? And then, but then you explain your life story. You
and
know, so
they
transfer
you to another department, and then you have to say it all over.
Absolutely.
Again.
It's
oh,
like
my God.
It's like, yeah. Okay, what's your problem? Well, did you? There's no notes on your screen? Like,
right.
Okay, well, here's what the deal is. Oh, okay. You know, that's not this department. Let's say.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then you spend forever. At the end of the day, your problem is unresolved.
Yeah.
You've explained it. You're out of time because you got to run. You got other stuff to
right.
do. And the next day you try again and you're back to the back of the line.
Yep.
It's so frustrating. Oh, my God.
So I have one. People on airplanes, when you've taxied or you're taxiing to the gate, you know, upon landing, and people will get up before it's okay to stand up.
Oh, and they all just stand there?
Well, what they end up doing is they cause the workers on the plane to say, will you please sit down? We told you you can't sit up. And the last time I was on a plane, over the intercom, the person said, we actually have a medical team coming on the plane because someone needs medical attention. So we just need everyone to stay seated, please. It's very clear.
Yeah.
And so it's not only just, you know, normally you should be seated
it's
until
social etiquette. It's
yeah.
Something
well,
serious.
Yeah, exactly. And it's something serious, you know, it,
right.
I don't know what's going on. You're thinking, right. Man, someone needs the medical team, you know, stay out of the, what do I need to do? I guess while I'm on this gripe of wrath, people who don't know how to get out of the way of emergency vehicles on the road. This drives me up the wall. I was just yesterday, I was on a two lane intersection, and to my left was a left turn lane. And the police officers behind, there was something going on ahead of us, like lots of aid cars, lots of police officers. They decided, I was like, oh man, here they come, but I'm at a stop where I'm at a stoplight, can't move. And I'm like, man, what are they going to do? And there's a median too, so they can't go into the left lane. And they get into the left turn lane because there's only two cars there. You know what I mean? And
right.
Because they're thinking the left turn lane, once they, you know, once it gets green or they, these, you know, a-holes figured out, two cars are easier to get out of the way than like 15 cars. So they chose left turn lane, even though they didn't want to turn left, right? So they get in the left turn lane, and they're right next to me. Woo, 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 woo. And I'm looking ahead, and I'm like, so even though it's red, those people need to get the F out of the way.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, these polite Seattleites will not run a red light, even though they should be running that red light.
Right.
Polite yet passive aggressive. Can I bump in on this a little bit about Seattle drivers? You guys are natives here. I have a question for you. Very polite, very defensive drivers, very much like they'll like let somebody pass across you and stuff. But they also, if you're at a stoplight and it turns green, you have about a half a second before the person behind you honks at you.
Yeah,
no tolerance.
Because one, especially if you're in a left turn lane that lasts for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Now, if it's just a regular green,
and
like,
it is often,
then I'm fine with that. I'll be sitting behind them, going like, "Come on, you know." why would you not see the light is the question.
Because you're texting on your
exactly.
phone.
Exactly. So because that has increased, and I can see the person in front of me not looking at the road.
Yeah.
And so my attitude about that is, not only are you not being courteous to the cars behind you, but you're actually, you have a practice that's actually not that great. Now, I'm guilty of that too, so I'm not saying that I'm not. But
right.
But anyway, so.
But it's, but you know, like, it's as exasperating as when someone starts in on a gripe of wrath, they switch onto a different one, someone switches a third time.
I hate that.
I hate it.
Wait, you were in the middle of yours?
No, you were in the middle of your own.
Oh. So
wait, we're recording a podcast right now?
So I was the one who did it myself.
and then Drain added to the fire.
Yeah. So then the cars don't move because it's red and they're too scared or they right. don't know what to do.
Right.
It common sense. I always try to equate it to what would happen if you were in a lane at the grocery store and you were, and there happened to be a stop sign there or something.
Right.
If aid, you know, workers started running up behind you saying, please get out of the way, would you just stand there? No, you would recognize. You can break this
I'm
rule.
I'm in line.
I don't know, guys.
Move.
Come on, man. Have you ever seen a bunch of people try to exit out of a building quickly or something
oh.
like that? There's some trade-off in the human experience that's yeah. like common sense versus social etiquette versus herd mentality.
Well, yeah. Under stress, people freak out. But I find that when people are in cars, they just have a hard time logicking their way through, and they follow these very simple rules, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That don't necessarily apply to the situation. But anyway, it turned green. So I was like, well, thank God. All of our lights have turned green, including the green arrow turning left. So these two cars now have total right. They should be like, boom, speed out of the way. Guess what happened?
They didn't move.
They didn't move.
No way.
Because they were freaking out that there were aid cars behind them. They did not move
Whoa.
Because they were following a simple rule, which was aid car stop.
Yeah.
But like, that's not the full rule.
Or panic,
that's
not the full freeze
rule.
Response.
The full rule is
let them through.
The full rule is
get the hell out of the way.
Get the within reason of safety to self and others, get out of the way.
Right. Yeah.
Don't stop.
It's not stopping so everyone stops. It's so that they could go through.
Right. So, and I'm watching this and I'm like, oh my God, someone could be dying. There could be a shootout. I don't right. know what's happening. And you're that dumb. And so, by the way, my lane, they're not moving either because they shouldn't.
Well, they shouldn't.
They shouldn't be moving.
Right.
But the two idiots in the green, they're just like, ah.
Oh my gosh. With the eight cars behind them.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. Okay, that's terrible. So what happened on your airplane though?
So this guy stands up and
Inception again.
And I'm like, and all of us are groaning at it. We're like, dude, you know? And the woman gets on the intercom, says, sir, we need you to sit down because we have medical professionals coming or something. Someone needs medical assistance. And the guy will not sit down.
Excellent.
And there's nothing, and he can speak English, you know?
Yeah.
And because I realized this later, because, I don't know, 30 seconds later, and I was about to do it myself, but I was a little too far away. I was like 10 rows back, but someone closer like said something to him like, hey, sit down. You need to sit down. Because the other notion is maybe the medical professionals can't even get on the plane until order is established or something, you know what I mean?
Like
we're all being sort of dragged behind, and the guy starts arguing with this guy that's saying and he won't sit down.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So all these things run through my mind around like trauma and PTSD and people who get flooded under certain circumstances. You know, there's this notion of when you look at someone like that, like narcissistic or something, but really my interpretation is they're probably anxious about being on a plane anyway, in all likelihood, and they're so triggered and claustrophobic or something that they're inflated that their brain isn't working right.
Yeah,
could be. And how is that different than your traffic example?
Well,
somebody panicking with
the difference,
EMTs behind them,
and totally possible as well. But at the same time, if you're gonna get in a car
right.
and drive on the road, you need to. and it's a common mistake that a lot of people have. I mean, not only do people freeze in situations like that on the road, but they also, even under very, very mundane circumstances around aid cars, like there'll be two lanes. Like the road up here at 10th Avenue is two lanes. And we'll, you know, an aid car, and, you know, usually you have cars in both lanes. The aid car will be, you know, zooming in the left lane, and people in the left lane won't get over. You know, it's just a simple thing of just like, you don't even have to slow down. If you're that dumb or like discourteous, just get over in the right lane. Yeah. A car is zooming up behind you with lights and siren. Just get over. And they won't. They'll just be like, dum-de-dum. And so I think it's that people – here's the thing. What I think people do is they run into a problem. They don't know what to do, not because they're jerks, but they just don't know what to do. And then after the event, they don't try to figure out what to do in the future. Because I have a hard time believing that's the only time that's happened to that person.
So here's the thing. We took our driver's test ages ago, right?
Yeah.
That was the last time
we had
formal instruction about how to drive.
Right.
The rest of the time, now we all drive on muscle memory. In fact, the only reason we aren't all dying left and right from the texting and the phones and things like that is because we have such good muscle memory, right? Mm-hmm. Our bodies are reacting like instinctually to the thing. And we don't even have shift gears anymore. So it's like now really just like some basic muscle memory. And our visual field is easy and stuff like this. But so anything outside of that norm, we haven't trained one day for it.
You guys, how often do you renew your licenses up here? 4 years?
But you don't have to take a test, though.
Okay, that's what I'm getting at. So you take the test once when you're like 16, and that's it.
Is it different in Arizona?
Arizona, their licenses don't expire. Mine doesn't expire till 2048.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then you have to take it.
They don't expire for like 50 years.
And then you have to take a test again?
No. You just don't.
Oh.
You just never worry
about
it.
When I'm 80, I have to go back.
Right.
And, you know.
No, so that's the thing. Because think of any other thing, like a video game, right? Like you.
Man, your picture would be so out of date.
Exactly. Well, mine wouldn't be, but, you know.
So think about how when you're playing a video game and you've not encountered a certain kind of boss before. The first time you run into it, you usually die because you're like, I don't know how to beat that.
Right.
And then it even feels sort of impossible. But then you try it again, then you learn the thing, and then eventually you get good at it. Well, in driving, on an average day, the same stuff happens that every other average day. That's why when there's an emergency, people crash. People don't know what to do because they never train for any of this stuff. Yeah. So I'm not surprised so many people freeze because it's just like, well, I didn't know what to do.
Yeah. But a simple Google search when you get home will answer your questions. Sure. So I just find that it's frustrating that people don't, because most of my knowledge of aid cars happened post training of, you know, formal training. I remember the basics, you know, from when I took driver's ed in high school, but they never said run a red arrow.
Right.
But that's logically what you should be doing. You know what I mean?
I got it. So you're saying that you learned most of your stuff just by social norms, right?
And by I've never seen a social norm around running a red arrow. Like, but I know because I've paid attention.
Because you've seen other people do it.
No, that particular one, actually, I know police officers and aid car people. And I guess I pay attention to what they say. And what I learned a long time ago was, please get the F out of the way. We don't care how you do it. Get out of the way.
But Honda, to your point, like, let's say they didn't run the red light, but they still didn't move when it turned green.
All right. We got another anonymous patron email about unrequited love. Anonymous patron writes, please, please, please do an episode on unrequited love. It's the story of my life. Guys, what do you think?
The girl with the red curly hair. Do you know? Do you remember Peanuts back in the day?
Yeah.
Charlie Brown was in love with this little girl with the red curly hair.
What was he in love with that girl a long time ago, or only in that recent movie? Because that was the plot.
I've not seen any movies, but
the plot of the recent Peanuts movie.
I haven't followed Peanuts since I was a kid, but as a kid, I had all these little Peanuts books.
Yeah,
and in one of them. One of the sub-threads was that he was always pining for this girl with the red curly hair.
Did you have the old Peanuts books that were so old that everyone looked different?
Well, they were just black and they were black and white books. You know, they're just like
I had ancient Peanuts comic books, little paperbacks that were so old that no one looked like the way Schultz eventually landed on. Like Snoopy looked more like a real dog, and everyone just had very like the kids had kind of more descriptive faces. If that makes sense.
I think these
sense.
Were from the 70s, so I don't know.
Anyway,
but the point is that
I'm a hipster Peanuts person, right. And you came late.
And I'm a latecomer. The chapter was called Unrequited Love, so that's where I learned.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh,
Unrequited Love. So that's where I learned the.
Man,
word.
That's so Schultz to like drop some serious vocab on the kids.
Right.
Do you guys want to hear some movie examples about Unrequited Love? Do you
know
what the
top
Google is for this?
That is
one of my favorite.
This is why we got you on this
about
podcast
Mary.
For stuff like that.
Because I'm good like that. 500 Days of Summer.
Oh, love that movie. I need to watch that movie.
Love that movie.
Yeah. I've seen that once.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I was like, that was amazing. I mean, it's basically a rom-com, but it has so much depth to it.
Oh, I think it's so much more than that. I think I mean, I saw it when I was going through a breakup, which
it's
is
sort
like,
of existential rom-com.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt and
Zooey Deschanel. I've never hated her more. I love her, but in that movie, you know what I mean? Her character, I guess I should
what
say.
Else? What else?
What else?
My Best Friend's Wedding, 1997.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think
Julia Roberts is in love with her best friend. They are this heterosexual platonic relationship. I think they dated at one point, and then they sort of went their own way. They stayed friends. He starts to get married. She goes, oh, shit, this is my last chance. She flies to be into the wedding, and the whole time she spends a lot of the time sabotaging it. And then, spoiler alert, ultimately lets him, you know, go on.
They don't end
relationship.
Up together, which is great.
Right.
What about Love Actually? Is that on your list?
It is not.
Oh, remember Love Actually?
I do.
Remember one of the subplots? The guy is, spoiler alert, the guy is... Everyone thinks he's in love with this other guy who gets his best friend, who gets married to Princess Amidala's double, and and then it turns out that no, he's in love with her, but she still ends up marrying and ends up with the other guy.
So I have one: The Last Jedi. Rey is secretly in love.
No, don't say it
with Kylo.
Oh, don't say it! Oh my god.
All the anti-shippers just went straight to Twitter or wherever you go to.
I'm going straight to Twitter.
All right, how's this one? Edward Scissorhands, 1990.
Yeah.
Johnny Depp is a what? Yeah. What is he? He's some kind of maid puppet robot.
Yeah. An evil genius made a very cute, frazzled Frankenstein, and he died before. He could make the hands,
right?
And so he himself, I believe, made his own hands out of stuff around the shop, and it happened to be scissors.
See, I never got that because I was like, why did he bother to make scissor hands and then go make real hands? Like, what's up with that?
You know? Right. Hmm. Yeah.
Pretty in Pink.
Yo, Ducky,
right?
Totally.
Poor Ducky.
That's the best one you said so far because that is like. The definition of unrequited love, where you have a best friend who is...
Yeah.
There's a whole trope in the 80s of movies where the best friend is kind of longing for the girl, right?
John Hughes, like...
Yeah, John Hughes stuff, right.
Some Kind of Wonderful.
Ducky.
the drummer, Mary Stuart Masterson, is in love with her friend, played by What's-His-Face, and he falls in love with What's-Her-Face. Anyway.
Sean Cryer?
No.
That's Ducky.
Some Kind of Wonderful.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Anyway. Berto, anything about Unrequited Love? Anything else?
Yeah, well, so what's interesting about it is in the age of Me Too, it's an interesting compounding effect, right? Because you have a whole, I don't know if it's generation or a whole like humanity that grew up on the idea that, you know, a guy... will long after a girl, and then he's got to move heaven and earth to win her over, and he's got to do crazy things like hold up boom boxes loudly, bothering all the neighbors and
stuff
like
that. That's another good one.
But then this concept of stalkers entered the picture.
Right.
And so then at what point does a unrequited love dreamer become a stalker.
Is John Cusack, in fact, a stalker?
Is it only a stalker if the other person continues to say no?
Like, probably. That might actually be the red line. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So just to answer that question, it is a common refrain by the MGTOW people, right? It's like, hey, you know, like you just get, you know, you do what you're supposed to do, which right. is to chase the girl, and then you get accused of stalking. You know, it's bullshit. And it's like, no, the answer to it is responding with empathy to the other human being like a human being is supposed to do. So when you get any kind of pushback, like, please stop, you stop. Or you get a vibe from the other person like, I'm not digging this, or they don't give you any positive feedback, then you back off.
Yeah, but that's my point, though, is that all the movies we grew up on...
Oh, they're just playing hard to get.
All of them.
Yeah, you're right.
It's like, I want nothing to do with you. I will never end up with you. End of the movie.
It's like James Bond. If I just push hard enough, I'll get her to love me.
Yes. You know? Wonderful.
Very nice. Very nice.
I thought Sean Connery was like sitting right there.
Yeah, he was. He's right here.
Absolutely. And, like in the John Hughes movies,
right.
16 Candles, like right. The Revenge of the Nerds, like it is rife with that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. And so even ones where I wouldn't say that there's any forceful pushing, although I can't quite remember. Like take Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, right? Like they hate each other. They can't stand each other. But it's okay. If they're in close quarters for long enough, they end up together.
And right. What about in The Last Crusade, that scene where they're in the hotel and he's like, get off of me. I don't like fast women. And then they start making out again and she pushes away. I hate you. And they start doing it again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This mixed message.
Right.
Like, what the hell's going
right?
on?
Yeah.
So that's what, you know, anyway. So my point about unrequited love is that it is a very romantic notion.
Right.
In fact, so much of, Pride and Prejudice. Like that whole novel is about unrequited love.
Oh, that's
right?
a good one, yeah.
And then what's the lesson? What's the takeaway? What's the, you know, don't mess with Maui when he's in Pride and Prejudice. Because like we have a situation where Mr. Darcy is trying to win the affections of this gal who hates his guts. Hates him based on some misunderstandings. Still hates him. But he tries, and he finally wins in the end. You know, it's there. And so unrequited love is a universal theme. Unrequited love, you could say, is deeply part of the Bible as well. You know, like there's
really?
There's all these themes in there about the whole God-human thing is unrequited love, right? Like he loves us unconditionally, just wants us to love him, but we won't because we rebel. Right, it's like it's all unrequited love.
Good point. That's fascinating.
But he's gonna keep trying, and we're gonna set a little like we're gonna go to the judge, get a court order. No, he's gonna keep trying.
Yeah.
So God has a big boombox in the sky.
Yes, big boombox.
So anonymous patron, I don't know what to say about you. You say it's a story of your life, unrequited love. I don't know what to say. Yeah, it sucks. I suspect that. In the end of your movie story, you're not necessarily having these things get reciprocated. So that hurts. It hurts to be rejected. It hurts to put energy into something that is ultimately painful. It happens to all of us. If it's a pattern, patron, then I would look into it. Perhaps if you're saying it's a story of your life, then I would look into. Possibly you are reenacting a rejection dynamic that you experienced when you were young, mm-hmm. and that if you heal from that or at least get some awareness around it, you won't recreate it or be attracted to people that are guaranteed to reject you or socialize others actually to reject you. Also, it could be the result of trying to avoid closeness for fear of being rejected or this notion of idealization of others when we hate ourselves. One of the things that we will resort to is actually idealizing others as a way of the way that I phrase the metaphor is we actually put our good qualities in ourselves and other people because we believe that unconsciously that we will destroy them because we're terrible humans. And so we will idealize other people, or at the very least, we're trying to absorb an idealized notion of another person to make us good. There's lots of other reasons why we would have a repeated life of unrequited love. We've talked about dating before. It's hard. Anyway, So I have a short question from famous patron Lyndon I want to close with, guys.
Oh, Lyndon, love you.
What is the most embarrassing faux pas that you and Berto and Michael Drain have made in public? Berto, why don't you start off the thing?
Oh, my gosh. All right.
So embarrassing faux pas.
Yeah. So when I was a wee
in
intern.
In public.
Yes, yes, yes. When I was a wee intern in my job.
Which is?
What do you mean?
They intern for Facebook
when
lawyers?
When I was the Facebook privacy lawyer intern.
Right.
A long time ago, before Facebook even existed. I was new to the whole free booze at events. You know, like that was a new thing for me. So they had this event at 5 p.m. after work, and it was in the big cafeteria, and everyone came, and they had like different people presenting. Like it was like a little fair of different projects that were completing and things like that.
And there was alcohol?
And there was free booze.
Oh, and here we go.
So, and I'm talking about like I think I was probably 20, 21 at the time, like just 21, you know. And I go down. I'm like, oh, sweet. And then the gals come by with the wine, and it was Chardonnay. Which, by the way, if you've ever gotten plastered on Chardonnay, well, that's bad news, man. It is bad news. It's Chardonnay does, at least for me, does not go down easily. It comes out even worse. So I start drinking. I haven't eaten any dinner, so I'm on an empty stomach. And I'm like, oh, Chardonnay, sure.
Wait,
and
is this going to have a vomit scene because you know I don't
I'm
like
going to skip that. I'm going to get to the porn vomit scene. No,
right.
No, anyways, and I'm drinking as if it's apple juice. You know, it's like,
what does that mean?
Meaning I'm just
like
downing them like, no,
oh,
I'm
downing them. Like,
is that how you drink apple juice?
That's how babies drink apple juice.
What do you mean? Like a little sip
well,
at a time?
It's like apple juice. I think of like a sippy cup.
Right, right. A better metaphor or simile or whatever would have been like a Gatorade after a marathon.
Sure, but I figured we all have drank juice in a non-wine drinking.
But honestly, apple juice is particular because it's so tart sometimes it's hard to chug.
Okay, fine, whatever. But my Chardonnay was very much like an apple juice because apple juice is also tart. But anyway.
Wait, let's drill down on this apple.
So I'm sitting there drinking. Between 5 p.m. and 8 p.m., so 3 hours, I had 8 glasses of Chardonnay on an empty stomach.
Oh.
Jeez. Oh, my God, right?
Dude, so this that's like dude. 2 bottles of wine.
And I was still 20, here podcasting.
And I was 21. All right. So somewhere along this path, I go to one of the little booths and this gal is presenting her project.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, oh, wow. And this is not only is it before the Me Too movement, this is before like society as a whole existed, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, wow, this is so amazing.
Right. So this is what, like 96 or something?
It is. Yeah. 96. Yeah.
And I'm like,
wow, your hair is amazing. I'm like, just like all these things. And we get to talking and blah, blah, blah. Next thing I know, I open my eyes and I am sideways. Like the world is sideways. And there's a bucket of stuff that Kirk doesn't want to hear about next to me. And I'm in a place that I don't recognize. And I like laboriously like get up.
And you were new at the job.
I'm an intern.
You're like, an intern.
Yeah. Like, I'm not even full-time. Like, I'm so disposable. It's like, oh, I stepped on an intern. That's okay. They'll clean it up. You know, it doesn't matter. And I'm sitting there in someone's house that I don't... I'm like, what the heck?
You're in a house.
I'm in someone's house. And I'm like... And I go, and it turns out it's my friend's house, but it's a rental thing. So I've never actually been there. And I'm like, what's going on? He's like, oh, you don't remember? I'm like, no. Oh... Well, it was not good. And I'm like, what? Okay, so then, like, I get a ride to work, and when I get there, this other person that's a full-timer who's a little more senior sees me and is like, what are you, okay? What's going on? And I'm like, oh, I don't remember much. He's like, okay, like, you might want to go talk to your manager. And I'm like, really? And then I go talk to my manager, and my manager doesn't know anything about anything. I'm like, do you know? He's like, no, I don't know. What are you talking about? So I'm like, okay. So I go and I start remembering, oh, I was talking to this gal. So I get it in my head. I'm like, oh, I need to go apologize because I don't know what I said or whatever. So I go downstairs and I go to try to find her office. And I pass by some dude's office and I go,
God, hey. I just want to say, most people, including myself, might have just walked out the door and never came
and
back.
Never came back, yes. So I walk past this guy's, and I'm like, excuse me, do you know where such and such's office is? And he's like, you have some balls showing up here. Or showing down here or whatever, you know? And I'm like, what? And first of all, I don't remember that I met him the previous night. I don't remember he was there and saw whatever, you know, it's whatever they're upset about. And I'm like, what the? And he's like, yeah, I don't think she wants to see you.
She?
The gal I was talking to.
I see.
Because I'm trying to find her. So right. I'm like, oh.
Unrequited well, love.
Unrequited so, love, right.
Can I please just. So he like, think he begrudgingly points me at the office. Now I show up. And I'm like feeling, like you're saying, I want to sort of like just leave and crawl into a hole and just never come back. But I, the type of person I am, which you've come to know, is like, I'm just going to face this. So I go and I'm like, hey, so I'm really sorry about what I did, but I have no idea what I did. Now, she turns out to be like an ex-hippie. Like, so she's actually like, what? No, man, we were all just having a great time. There's no problem. And I'm like, oh, okay. So like, if I offended you in any way, it's like, no. We're all drinking. It's all good.
Oh, my God.
And then she's like, you know, my husband was not. So, and I'm like,
oh,
your
shit.
Husband. Turns out her husband was standing like next. And when I was hitting on her or whatever. So I'm like, okay, well.
You're smooth.
Can I apologize to him? And she's like, no. No. And so, like, it ended there. And then I heard through the grapevine what I had done. But really, it wasn't anything dramatically bad. It was just that I was hitting, super drunkenly hitting on this gal while her husband, who was a senior, like, director-level person.
At Facebook.
At the company. At the unnamed company. I should probably say this was before Facebook.
Oh,
this was
okay.
In
okay. Right.
My previous grass maintenance.
Of course.
But anyways.
Oh, your scheme has bit you in the butt.
But the person is standing there while this was happening, and I had no idea that was her husband. So it was like apparently super embarrassing. Some people had to like, they thought that someone was going to get really upset or someone was going to get fired. So they like pulled me away.
So that's it?
I was still trying to talk, and they removed me. They took me in someone's car. I threw up in their car, and they removed me, and they took me to someone's house.
You that's, hot mess.
That's... That is not what I thought you were going to say.
Well, I mean, I certainly didn't do anything, you know, egregious, but it was...
I mean, it was bad, but it from the sound of... I thought that was just... I thought you figured something involving that was good, but I thought there was going to be a whole epic odyssey around, like... And then I...
Well, keep in mind who I am is, like, I wouldn't have done anything aggressive towards her or... You know, anything like that.
But so like other events that, you know.
Oh, yeah, no.
You pulled your pants down or something.
Well, actually, they did save me because apparently when they took me to the bathroom, I was laying on my back and I like threw up and they had to like flip me on the side.
Like a baby.
Like a baby.
Yeah.
So, but here's the thing to understand. By the time I started hitting on her, I was so far gone and all that hadn't happened is my brain was like by the last little thread until all those 8 wines caught up to me. And then the rest of that like half hour was a complete blur. So I couldn't have done much more damage beyond that.
You were kind of saved by the fact.
Saved by the alcohol.
Saved by the biology of
but,
alcohol.
But apparently there were a couple, because you know there were a couple, nowadays they call them white knights, you know. There are a few white knights who were not her husband who were so offended by my behavior. My bet was that they secretly wanted to hit on her and were super upset that someone
sometimes
did it.
White knights are not white knights.
And they were so upset at me that they were the ones that wanted to kick my ass. And so they had to, like, other people had to remove me and take me away and all these things.
Interesting. You got one?
My own podcast went off in my pocket in class the other day.
Oh my God.
Wait, so you started talking?
So, yeah, my own voice. Because I screen, after I post an episode, I usually post it to the stalkers or the patrons, and then they kind of get the first draft, and I will screen it and kind of listen to it. Mm-hmm. So I was doing that, and it was the imposter syndrome episode. Mm-hmm. And I heard, it's a very confusing sensation, I heard my own voice, and they were kind of looking at me. One person was just... pretending not to look at me, and the other one was looking at me thinking I was directly like speaking to them and then having to reach into my pocket. And then what do you explain? And I didn't explain it. I just sort of like turned my phone off Sorry, continue. Have you ever had that happen?
Oh, my God.
Absolutely, that's happened to me for the same reason. Like, I don't do it anymore, but I used to listen to the episode like 3 or 4 times and take notes on like what needed to be edited and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And there are settings on your phone where it will accidentally just start playing.
Yes.
And
are you listening to yourself?
This is unpopular culture.
That's happened to me in my car multiple times where I had been listening to a CD I had made of my music, right? And someone gets in and I forgot to like stop it. And I start singing. And it's like, is this you? And I'm like, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. I was just, it's like, you're listening to yourself.
I got in Kirk's car the other day and he had one of his band songs, a Bread Knife Incident song playing.
That's hilarious because in my head I was like, wait, I think that happened to me recently. Yeah. It was with you.
And I was like, man, this sounds really familiar. I know this voice.
But I'm not shy about it because long ago I reconciled with the very real reality that the vast majority of the listens on Spotify to my music has been has been me, you know.
Dude, I actually like my music, so I actually don't mind listening.
Right. It's like I wrote those songs not for the public.
Right.
If the public likes it, great, but I wrote it because I like the songs, you know. So
speaking of bands, by the way, that person in that story, I won't name the name, but did you know she ended up being a drummer in one of my bands?
Oh, I know her then.
Years later.
I know her.
Isn't that crazy?
I don't know how you repaired that relationship, but well done.
Because apparently for her, there was never any damage. It was for everyone around her.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And you plastered her face on your van.
Oh, shit.
Uh-oh.
We'll have to talk about that off
air. All right. So I actually had a few embarrassing moments, but we've run out of time, so I have to save it.
Oh, what?
Yeah, how convenient.
Saved by the bell.
If I want to talk about April Fools, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So I just want to tell my experience. Then, Drane, I want you to talk about your experience. And then, Berto, I want you to talk about what actually happened. So April Fools, I wake up and and I go on the internet and I see some April Fool's stuff on Reddit or something, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, it's April Fool's, and it's Easter. It's like, it's interesting. And so I, you know, just take note of that. And then I get this notification that there's this post that's been made by the Psychology in Seattle page on Facebook. So, you know, we have a fan page and we have our page. So the R page is mainly my page, and Berto is an admin too. But then the fan page is for the fans, right? And so I see that our page has posted to the fan page, and it says that we are canceling the podcast, that all good things, .. we're sorry, but we have to inform you that
it is with a heavy heart, I believe.
Heavy heart.
Started. Yeah.
Yeah. And there are a few other details, but honestly, I only got past the first sentence, and I had a very, I had racing thoughts, right? The mixed reaction. I immediately thought someone had hacked our Facebook account, which, thinking about it, it's like, well, why would they do that if they hacked it? Because they would have to hack one of our full accounts,
right?
You know what I mean? Anyway, and so I thought someone hacked, and then I thought, well, wait a second. And then I saw at the bottom, because I see that it was posted by Umberto, because we're admins, it actually shows that to me. And I was like, did Umberto... is he writing a joke? Because you have some extremely convoluted jokes, even not on April
Fool's Day. Not on April
Fool's Day. Not on April Fool's Day. And so I immediately texted you and I said, did you just post a joke to Facebook? And then, you know, I'm kind of freaking out because I'm like, did someone hack it? What do I need to do? And then people are already reacting because, you know, people are like, because I could have immediately, as an admin, I could have deleted it right away.
Yeah, right.
But I wanted to make sure, like, is this some sort of weird scheme that Berto's up to? Because I just didn't know what to do. Then I start seeing different comments, and people are sad and da-da-da. And then one person, I think it was Lyndon, actually commented, ha-ha-ha, April Fools or something like that. And I was like, oh, I get it. And then I read it more closely, and I was like, oh, Berto's doing April Fool's, and then I immediately texted you and said, oh, I get it. I think there was maybe like a 30-second gap there. And I then I thought, well, and then I looked at some more of the comments, and some people were saying they were crying.
Yeah, it was really strong
and,
reaction. Yeah.
And then I thought, we should probably like nip this in the bud, you know? Yeah. And then I was like, well, I don't know. It is April Fool's. And this is Birdo, and it's on the fan page, which I vowed to not get involved in. The only reason why I knew about it was because it was posted. Because
I posted as the psychologist.
As the page. I wouldn't have seen it otherwise.
The thing is, I knew if I posted as myself, it would get almost zero believability.
I think
people know you, man.
Right. Well, I don't know, man. I don't know if that's true, because it was written so dryly. But anyway,
right?
What was your experience?
Well, okay, so it was written dry. It was almost written like you wrote it. It was more professional and like straight.
Except with the glaring obvious giveaway. So that
there was no giveaway,
dude. I thought when I wrote it, I thought, well, this is going to be so dumb. No one will believe it for a second because of the three giveaways.
Which were what?
Number one, our final episode will be about evolutionary psychology in education.
How's that a giveaway?
Because Honda would never end
of course the
podcast
he would.
With
he would
evolutionary
totally do a deep dive
psychology.
On something like that.
No. And number two, I said, Berto is going to reveal his real job. It's like, come on!
Now that, see, again, that would make sense.
No.
If you guys were doing your last podcast ever.
I would never.
Berto, me and him and everyone else did not get it as a joke, so therefore,
well, the last one though,
it was in your head.
Because
these are not giveaways. Buddy.
Everyone knows that
I love you.
A giveaway would be like April Fool's, or
right. Yeah, right. Or, not really. Just kidding.
Or like we will be our last episode will be on April 1 or something.
Well,
like that would be a
what's
giveaway.
What's your third giveaway?
How I closed
quote.
It. Uh-huh. Like everyone knows our catchphrase. How do we end every podcast?
Oh yeah, like
take care of yourself because you deserve it. Uh-huh. And instead I said it's like, hey, let's all take it easy because we're pretty good or some weird random not the right catchphrase. But what was
that's
I supposed
to do?
No,
giveaway.
No, but wait a minute. According to you, what I should have done if I wanted to be concerned that I might have given a giveaway, say, April Fool's, colon, the following is an April Fool's joke, colon, this is the April Fool's joke.
No.
And
I might call that the other extreme.
I'm not saying that it was a bad April Fool's joke.
Oh, it's
like,
great.
Honestly, I and everyone else should have known it was April Fool's. So it was a fine. It was an ethical. it was an ethical April. There are unfair play. Like there was some news story about someone who his father entered breakfast with the family and said, "I got a job in Germany. We're moving to Germany."
Oh.
And he said it so realistically that the wife and kids completely believed, and one of the kids started crying and going, "Well, great, now I have to get a whole new group of friends," and like ran out of the room. And the guy kept it up, and the wife was like, "Okay, well, I guess we can make it." Like everyone had normal, very emotional reactions, and then like a ways later, he's like, "April Fool." So that's unethical. What you did, I would contend, should have, especially when you looked at, there was a very early comment that said, "Oh, I get it, April Fool's."
Right.
At the very least, you would have been like, "Oh, this must be an April Fool's," you know?
Right.
So, but the notion that you have that it was so obvious.
Well, someone did comment on the evolutionary psychology. I'm surprised no one said, that's not their catchphrase. Like, that's just weird. And someone said, Baradon would never reveal his job.
Because you don't believe in, what's your thing with evolutionary psychology? You have a thing against it, right? Or am I wrong about that?
I have a thing against any scientific endeavor that is based on dogma and not empirical observation. And obviously,
surely not all evolutionary psychology is dogma, though.
No, but much of it is. And dogma isn't the right word. The right word is motivated reasoning within research. So there are obviously things that we evolved as a psychology, for example, a sex drive,
sure,
a drive for survival,
socialization, all kinds of stuff,
a drive for attachment, a drive to eat, a drive to drink water, salt, fats, high caloric things. You know, it's pretty obvious. But the things that are in peer-reviewed journals in evolutionary psychology are ridiculous things like we evolved. This is literally a study that's been that way. And these are studies that passed several editors. You know what I mean? Like there were studies that were left out of these journals because really in a lot of these journals, only like one in 100 articles actually get published. And there was one finding that said that when women hear a ticking clock, they want to have a child sooner.
Oh, that's bullshit. I mean, that kind of stuff.
Well, a true Scotsman would believe that our final episode would be about evolutionary psychology.
I don't know. I could completely see Kirk doing the deep dive
right
on that.
So what was your reaction when you read it?
Okay, so I opened it up, and it's like the first thing I saw, and my heart sank to the floor. I was like, no. I must have felt like a lot of your listeners did, except I know how to get a hold of you guys. So, but I read the comments, and there was no giveaway, and at least no giveaway that I saw in the post itself. But once I started reading the comments, there were a few people that were like, "Oh, it's an April Fool's joke." I hand my phone. I'm with Corey Stewart. I hand my phone to her. Same thing. She's like, "What?" She goes, "Should I text him?" I'm like, yeah, you should text him.
Well, what you told me was Corey was about to yell at me.
Yes. She was going to call you and bitch you out.
And walk you off the ledge.
Right.
I mean, one thing that I will say...
And then further down the comment chain, people are crying.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who do not have sensibilities for practical jokes.
Right. So one thing I'll say is I'm okay with those because I guess I'm used to it. But so there was one person who's like called me a feckin' idiot. But the ones that were really surprising, and I almost felt bad for doing it, was that there are people seriously taking it to heart.
Yeah.
So like, no, yes. You know, like, and then so I was like, oh, maybe this was too hard.
I shared it to UPC's Facebook page, to Unpopular Culture, and then re-traumatized some of your listeners, because we got a lot of cross listeners,
oh,
you know what
no.
I mean? And I had, and then I realized I had just furthered the damage, because now my listeners are like, what?
If anyone's in the wrong here, it's you!
I know. Like, not really, though, right? Gosh. I'm like, no, they're just twisted.
Yeah, so... You'll just have to outdo yourself next year, Berto.
Here's what I don't understand. How did you guys make it almost 10 years without coming up with that?
No, actually, well, what's funny is that I, until recently, the podcast hadn't had enough sort of like social momentum to where I would even bother.
Right.
Right. But the fan page is pretty active and we had the big event. So I feel a little more involved with the community. Actually, before last year, I sort of didn't know any fans or even felt like we had fans, even though we saw the numbers.
Right.
So I only did it ironically because I'm like, oh, hey, there's people kind of listening. So maybe they'll care if I post an April Fool's joke.
See, you meet Berto, he starts to mess with your head. That's the takeaway there.
So if you want me to not to make an April Fool's joke,
stay away.
Yeah. So
caveat emptor.
Michael Drain, listeners, welcome to my world.
Yeah. Love you, boys.
But okay. See, I can't do the same thing next year. I can't be.
No,
like,
you can never do that
we
again.
We are a regret to.
Right.
Well, that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us on the podcast, Michael Drain.
Thank you, Kirk. If you guys want to check us out at Unpopular Culture, hit us up on at UPC Podcast.
UPC.
That does it for that episode. And please take care of yourself because
you deserve it.
Yeah, you do.